read verse 3 and verse 4. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness, going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. Notice in verse 3, God's righteousness, and then we have in the latter part of the verse, the righteousness of God. Then notice concerning this righteousness, they, that's the religious Jews that Paul is burdened over in this chapter, they, religious people, but lost, being ignorant of God's righteousness. So from that, we see there is such a thing as an ignorance of God's righteousness. Now, the word ignorant, of course, can mean unlearned, without knowledge. Can also mean to be unaware of something, to be unconscious of something, be oblivious to something. Now, I believe we can say from Scripture that all of the unsaved are ignorant of God's righteousness. But even the saved can be ignorant of God's righteousness in the sense that they become unconscious or oblivious to the righteousness of God. Really, the history of religion shows the ignorance of God's righteousness. It shows the prevailing ignorance concerning the Lord. Now notice there is a natural result of being ignorant of God's righteousness. And that is, they go about to establish or to set up their own righteousness. This is always the result of being ignorant of God's righteousness. They set up their own standards of righteousness. Those standards that they set up are standards that's going to make them feel good about themselves and make them feel that they are accepted by the Lord. Notice also this ignorance of God's righteousness is really a rebellion against God, and the fact that they set up their own standard of righteousness is a rebellion against God. We see that in have not submitted themselves to the righteousness of God. So establishing their own standards of righteousness, they refuse to submit to God's standard of righteousness. That's rebellion. So they rebel against God's way of acceptable righteousness. And they believe that righteousness is solely obedience to some standard that they have created or that they have chosen. And it'll be a standard in which they feel comfortable in, be a standard in which they feel accepted. Concerning that, notice in verse 4, for Christ, who is, we're just adding this, it doesn't say this, but for Christ, and Christ is the righteousness of God, which we'll see a little later. But notice, for Christ is the end of the law for righteousness. That is, obedience to the law, whether saved or unsaved, does not make you righteous. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness, specifically for righteousness. So from all of this, we see that the ignorance of God's way and provision of righteousness is a very dangerous thing. For the unsaved, such ignorance will end in eternal damnation. You can't get more dangerous than that. For the saved, who become unconscious of God's way of righteousness, or who become oblivious to God's way of righteousness, or forgetful of God's way of righteousness and God's provision of righteousness, there's a danger, because it will lead to a multitude of error. It will lead to a wrong spirit. It will lead to a wrong attitude concerning God, concerning God's service, concerning self, and concerning others. So you want to speak tonight on dangerous ignorance of God's righteousness. Now notice in our text, there is God's righteousness, twice mentioned, and there is man's righteousness, referred to as their own righteousness. And know this, one of these righteousnesses is accepted, that being God's righteousness, and the other is rejected, unacceptable to God. And this is always so. This is so concerning the unsaved. This is also so concerning the saved. I want to mostly speak to the saved, but we must realize the importance of not becoming ignorant of God's righteousness. Now these words, and we're going to look at a lot of verses, and some of them we're going to look at more than once. Usually, what we're looking at tonight is directed solely toward the unsaved, and certainly every one of these certainly applies to the unsaved. But I believe God's people can become ignorant of God's righteousness. That is, they can become unconscious and oblivious, and the result is going to be the same. They set up their own standard of righteousness. First of all, we need, whether saved or unsaved, this is true, we need to have a proper view of our so-called righteousness. Part of not being ignorant of God's righteousness is not being ignorant concerning our own so-called righteousness. Again, that's true of the unsaved, that's true of the saved. What I mean by our own righteousness is anything apart from God's righteousness is our own righteousness. All works-based righteousness is our own righteousness. And what I mean by works-based righteousness is we do something and we think that by doing that it makes us righteous. That's works-based righteousness. That's a heresy when it concerns salvation, and it leads to innumerable errors in the life of the saved, a works-based righteousness. We're not speaking against works, not at all. We're speaking of people who think by doing something, and it can be anything, by doing that or by not doing something, that makes them righteous. Righteous. If you just think that through, that's utter foolishness. It's utter foolishness, and we'll look at that. Paul said in Philippians 3 and verse 9, mine own righteousness which is of the law. That is, it's based on keeping the law. It is, so that's what we're talking about, our own righteousness. It is also the same as the righteousness of the Pharisee in the parable of the Pharisee and publican. Notice in Luke chapter 18, verses 11 and 12. Luke 18, verses 11 and verse 12. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. So he abstained from particular things. He abstained from extortion and being unjust and or unfair and adultery and cheating people as this publican. So he believed he was righteous because of what he didn't do. But then in verse 12, I fast twice in the week. Nothing wrong with that. And I give tithes of all that I possess. In other words, if he had 10 tomatoes on the vine, he gave one to the Lord. Nothing wrong with that. But it don't make you righteous. The law doesn't make anyone righteous. Never has. Never will. So this is what we're talking about. So what about our own righteousness? Well, first of all, God condemns it. Our own righteousness, that which is apart from God's righteousness. Believing that doing something or not doing something makes us righteous. God condemns it. Isaiah 64 and verse 6, but we are all as an unclean thing. That is so by birth, that is so by nature, that is so by practice. And then he goes on to say, and all our righteousnesses, or all our righteousness, are as filthy rags or as a minstrel's cloth. All our righteousness, all that which is apart from God's way of righteousness, is as a filthy rag. That is true of everything outside of God's righteousness. Paul said in Romans 7 and verse 18, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. Did Paul do good things? Yes, but that didn't make him righteous. He said, in my flesh dwelleth no good thing. In other words, when I look at myself, I see nothing good, nothing that can make me righteous, nothing that can make me accepted before God. That includes giving tithes and offerings. That includes worship. It includes everything that God tells us to do. None of those things can make us righteous. None of those things can make us acceptable to God. We, the saved, must always realize that. We must realize there's nothing I do that makes me righteous. All the unsaved need to realize that you have no righteousness that can make you acceptable before God, that can make you righteous before God. So we need to realize that God condemns our righteousness. Also, the Lord exposes our righteousness. Again, a righteousness that is apart from God's righteousness. He did it several times in his ministry when he exposed the scribes and the Pharisees. But notice in Matthew chapter 23, he lays, and we're just going to notice a couple of things. We could get into these verses, but we're not going to. But we see he's exposing their so-called righteousness. And in so doing, we see the very characteristics of man's righteousness. In verse 5, he says, but all their works they do for to be seen of men. Man's righteousness is all about appearance. It's all about appearance. He's exposing this. There's pride. Verse 6, they love the uppermost rooms at feast and the chief seats in the synagogues. Verse 14, he mentions pretense. Verse 25, They make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Man's righteousness is all the external. All external. In verse 26, we see the same thing. They cleanse, well, in verse 27, "For ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward." And man's righteousness appears beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Verse 28, "Even so ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." So the characteristic of our own righteousness is appearance. We see that's exposed here in Matthew 23 in several different ways. It all comes down to appearance. Notice also, man's righteousness is incomplete. And this is what makes it so foolish for someone who is saved to get to a point in their life where they think because they don't do something or because they do certain things, they're righteous. You need to think that through, because man's righteousness is always, and I mean always, incomplete. Always. Whether saved or unsaved, all works-based righteousness is incomplete. Now notice in Romans chapter 3, and what is said here in Romans 3, verses 20 and 21, is almost always applied to the unsaved, and certainly it applies to the unsaved. But I believe it also implies to the saved. Romans 3, verse 20, "Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified." Now, we all believe that concerning the unsaved sinner. But how many believe it concerning the saved? You're not justified by the deeds of the law. You're not declared righteous by the deeds of the law. You're not made righteous by the deeds of the law. "Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified in his sight. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. But now, the righteousness of God," there it is again, the righteousness of God. Notice how it comes about. "The righteousness of God without the law is manifested." That applies to unsaved. It applies to the saved. Notice in verse 28, the last six words of verse 28, "without the deeds of the law." That's true of saved. That's true of unsaved. Notice the last three words of Romans 4, verse 6. "Righteousness without works." Again, we all believe that when it comes to the unsaved. No one is righteous by works. But not everybody believes that when it comes to the saved. But I'm here to tell you tonight, your righteousness had nothing to do with you being saved, and your keeping the law has nothing to do with being accepted by God. Nothing. Notice Romans 9, verse 31. Romans 9, verse 31. "But Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness," we should do that. You and I ought to follow the law of righteousness. Israel did that, but notice what it says. "Even though they followed after the law of righteousness, they have not attained to the law of righteousness." May I say that's always so? No matter how much you follow after the law of righteousness, you will never attain to the law of righteousness. Our righteousness is always incomplete. This is what is stated, notice, in James chapter 2. James chapter 2, verse 10. For whosoever shall keep the whole law, if it were possible, and yet offend in one point, he's guilty of all. If you break down the law of God just in the Ten Commandments, we've broken every one of them. Every single one. That's obvious as you read the Sermon on the Mount, which we're going to refer to here in a minute. So, if we keep the whole law, and yet offend in one point, we're guilty of all. Has anyone, other than Jesus Christ, ever kept the whole law? No. Jesus Christ is the only one who walked this earth that kept the whole law. Now, there are people, very few, but there are some who claim to keep the law. But notice what Christ said. Notice in Matthew 5. Again, I'm trying to show that our righteousness, that is righteous, if you think that doing something or not doing something makes you righteous, that kind of righteousness is always incomplete. Always. Matthew 5, verse 21, 22. Jesus addresses this whole subject in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, you've heard that it's been said of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever kills shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, what he's saying is, I take it a little further, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. And later on, we see that the statement is made, if you hate your brother, you're guilty of murder. So we've all broken that commandment. We've all been angry. We all have hatred within us. You can deny it all you want to, but it's the truth. Then notice in Matthew 5, verse 27 and 28, but ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. In other words, our righteousness is incomplete. Say that you never commit physical adultery. You never commit physical fornication. You're still guilty because you've committed it in your mind. You're guilty. We've broken the law. Our righteousness is always incomplete. Notice verse 48 of Matthew 5. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And then notice if we go over to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew 22, showing that our righteousness is always incomplete. Verse 36. Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. You've never done it. I've never done it. None of us have ever done it. It's never been done. Never will be done. Verse 38, this is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. We failed. So we see our righteousness is always incomplete. All, whether it be for salvation or whether it be for rewards, as far as the Christian is concerned, all works-based righteousness is incomplete and therefore unacceptable before God. It's all unacceptable before God. How anyone who knows anything about themselves can feel that they have been slighted because they've done things right is beyond me. You better stop and think about all the things you've done wrong, because we've done more wrong than we have right. So if anything, we shouldn't feel slighted that God, we don't get some because we did it right and so-and-so didn't. You ought to just thank God you're not in hell. You ought to thank God that you don't get what you deserve. A works-based righteousness is utter foolishness. It is utter foolishness. The end result of a works-based righteousness is stated very clearly in Romans 3, verse 23. For all have sinned. That's true. Whether saved or unsaved, for all have sinned. The next statement is also true. Whether saved or unsaved, and come short of the glory of God. Everything that the unsaved sinner does comes short of the glory of God. And may I say, everything that the saved sinner does comes short of the glory of God. So we need to get a real good picture of our righteousness. It's incomplete. Now consider God's righteousness. First of all, of course, it is divine. It's beyond human. It's something you and I cannot attain to. Notice in Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. This, of course, is referring to Christ. He says, In his days, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called, the Lord our righteousness. The Lord our righteousness. Anything short of that is unclean. Anything short of that is a filthy rag. The Lord our righteousness. Anything short of that is incomplete and unacceptable in God's sight. That's true for the unsaved. That's true for the saved. The Lord is my righteousness. Referring to Jesus Christ. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 30 and verse 31. But of Him, that is God the Father, are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God, speaking of Christ, is made unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. Notice again, Christ is our righteousness. Verse 31, that according as it is written, because Christ is these things and we are not, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. God's righteousness is divine. It's the very righteousness of Jesus Christ, which is perfect. God's righteousness is revealed in the gospel. Notice Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it, the gospel of Christ, is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein, the therein goes back to the gospel. For therein is the righteousness of God. The gospel reveals the righteousness of God. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed or unveiled from faith to faith, as it is written, the just or the justified shall live by faith. The gospel. The gospel, of course, is the good news. It is the good news of God's righteousness. It is the good news of God's provision of righteousness for those who have none and for those who have no means of achieving righteousness, which is everybody. Therein, the righteousness of God is revealed. So how does one secure The righteousness of God. How do we obtain this righteousness of God that God requires? He'll accept nothing less. God requires it. How do we obtain this righteousness that all obedience to the law comes short of? Again, Romans 9, verse 31, that Israel followed after righteousness, but they could not attain to the law of righteousness. How do we obtain this righteousness that is unveiled in the gospel? We would all give the same answer if we are speaking solely of the unsaved. But the answer is the same for the saved also. You cannot obtain it by works. Again, notice in Romans 3, verse 21, it is referred to as the righteousness of God without the law. The righteousness of God without the law. That is contrary to man's reasoning. In man's reasoning, righteousness is obedience to law. But this is the righteousness of God without the law. So, how do we obtain such a righteousness? How do we get that righteousness? Does anyone get or acquire that righteousness? Yes, they do. All the saved have this righteousness. Now, in our saved life, it is very possible, and it seems to be somewhat prevalent in our day, that God's people become ignorant of God's righteousness and then go about and establish their own ways of righteousness. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But the Bible teaches that this righteousness is an imputed righteousness. It is not an earned righteousness. It is an imputed righteousness. It is not something we can obtain by doing certain things or by not doing certain things. It is imputed. In other words, it is a righteousness that is put to our account. The righteousness of God without the law. In other words, it's not something that is done in us. That's sanctification. This righteousness that we're talking about is not something that's done in us. It's something that is done for us. God does it for us. Notice Romans chapter 4, verse 6 again. We read concerning David, even as David also describeth the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputeth righteousness without works. God imputes his righteousness, and he does so without works. Now, how do people shift? They're saved. They believe that God imputed righteousness and works had nothing to do with it. Now they're saved, and all of a sudden, to be righteous, they have to work. That's inconsistent. That's very unsound theology, but it's very prevalent theology today. And what does it do? It's an ignorance of God's righteousness. And it causes people to make, again, to go about and establish their own righteousness. And then notice in Romans 5, verse 17, for if by one man's offense, that being Adam, death reigned by one man, much more. That's two very important words there, much more. Much more. We didn't, in salvation, we didn't just regain what Adam lost. We got much more. Much more, they which receive abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness. It's a gift. It's imputed without the works of the law, and it is a gift. In the imputation of righteousness, God takes the very righteousness of Jesus Christ and puts it to my account. puts it to your account, puts it to your credit. Notice in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21. I want to just, for now, read the latter part of that verse, that we might be made, that's something done for us, that we might be made the righteousness of God. There it is again, the righteousness of God. But notice where it is, in Him. That we might be made the righteousness of God in Him. So what is this imputed righteousness? What does it mean when we say that God takes the righteousness of Christ and lays it to our account? You see, we speak often of the death of Christ. And the death of Christ, of course, there's no salvation without it. But there's no salvation without the life of Christ. You see, just Christ paying your sin debt is not enough to save your soul. Because you need a righteousness that you don't have, a righteousness that you can never achieve. So Christ came and lived a perfect life of righteousness. And not only did He pay our sin debt on the cross, but the righteousness which He lived on earth is put to our account. The best way to understand, other than giving illustrations, the best way to understand the imputed righteousness is really from the first part of 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21. For He, God the Father, hath made. That's something He has done. For God the Father hath made. Okay, He's telling us that God the Father has done something. God the Father, hath made Him, that's Christ, to be sin. And notice that next word, for. Remember we said the imputed righteousness of Christ is not something done in us, it's something done for us. And we see here to be sin for us, who, referring back to Him, which is Christ, knew no sin. In other words, He was perfect. Now, what that is saying is, the teaching there is Christ is our surety. Hebrews 7, verse 22, we read that Christ is our surety. What does that mean? That means that Christ, to put it in modern day language, is our cosigner. He's our cosigner. I believe it's a fact that if you cosign for somebody, more than likely, statistically, you're going to pay the bill. More than likely. I won't get into cosigning. Another lesson. But what this means is Christ is a surety. It means that Christ took responsibility for my sin debt. Same as a cosigner. You take responsibility. If they don't pay, it's now your responsibility. So, well, that's not fair. Well, you shouldn't sign. Jesus Christ took responsibility for our sin. He was our cosigner for a debt that we could not pay. So what the first part of this verse means is that my sins and all that is entailed in my sins, and you and I do not even conceive of that, all of my sins and all that is entailed in such was laid upon Christ. He became sin for us. All my sins were attributed to Jesus Christ, and they were all imputed to Jesus Christ. In the same way that my sins were laid to Christ's account, and just as he was, and they were laid to his account to such a degree that he was held responsible, that he was treated as the sinner. So just as my sins were laid to Christ's account, and just as he was treated as a sinner, so his righteousness is laid to my account, and now God accepts me as righteous. That is the only way that you can attain the righteousness of God. If you're here and unsaved, that is the only way that you can attain the righteousness of God. If you are here and saved, the only real righteousness you have is the righteousness that was imputed to you. If you think that by observing the Sabbath or doing this or doing this and not doing this, that makes you righteous, your righteousness is always incomplete. It always comes short. And it's always filthy rag because it's unacceptable to God. You say, but I'm doing my best. It's filthy rags. All our righteousness is as filthy rags. Now, if you were to go out on the street and you were to ask people who is righteous, who is righteous? How do you define a righteous person? The most common answer, not in these exact words, would be those who obey God. Those who do good to their fellow man. And we ought to obey God. And we ought to do good to our fellow man. But our righteousness always comes short. And our righteousness is unacceptable to God. And even when we obey God, that's not what makes us righteous. That's works-based righteousness. That's very dangerous. These things are true whether saved or unsaved. In closing, speaking to the saved, oh, that we would not be ignorant of God's righteousness. God's way of righteousness. The only righteousness that I have is the righteousness that was imputed to me by God. Everything else is as filthy rags. That was true before I was saved. That's true after I was saved. I have nothing of my own. So may we always be mindful. And may we always acknowledge, I am not righteous because of law. There is the righteousness of God without law. I am not righteous because I come to church every Sunday. I'm not righteous because I give a tithe. You ought to come to church every Sunday. You ought to give a tithe. You ought to give an offering. You ought to do everything that the Bible commands us to do. But always realize that that will not make me righteous. That will not make me acceptable to God. God's righteousness, Christ is the reason. It is His righteousness imputed to us. And therefore, we read in Romans 10, verse 4, for Christ, that is, once His righteousness has been imputed to us, we come to the realization that Christ is the end of the law for righteousness. I'm afraid that many of God's people have forgotten that. Christ is the end of the law for righteousness. I'm not saying that we should not obey the commands of God. We're going to get to that in a minute. But we are not righteous because we do those things. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. This is true. This was true in our salvation. This is true now. Paul stated in Galatians 2, verse 21, I said in closing, the closing is going to be somewhat lengthy. Paul stated in Galatians 2, verse 21, for if righteousness came by the law, if righteousness came by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. You realize the sin of thinking that you're righteous because you keep the law? What a grievous sin. Christ is dead in vain then, if that be true. It is followed, that statement in Galatians 2 verse 21, is followed by a rebuke to the churches of Galatia. Notice in Galatians 3, verses 1 through 3. Galatians chapter 3. Again, for if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that ye should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you? This only would I learn of you. Received ye the Spirit by the works of the law? Did you receive the Holy Spirit by the works of the law? Did you receive the Holy Spirit or by the hearing of faith? Are ye so foolish? Having begun in the Spirit, are ye now made perfect by the flesh? There are many people that carry that theology today. Saved by grace, though they don't know what that means. Saved by grace, but we are made righteous. We are righteous. We are a righteous people. Why? Because we do what God tells us to do. That doesn't make you righteous. Oh, foolish Galatians. That is foolish reasoning. We do not strive. What I'm saying is we do not strive to obey the law of God for righteousness, or for righteousness to be put to our account. We strive to live righteous lives because we have the righteousness of God through Jesus Christ put to our account. And that very fact ought to cause us to strive to obey every command of the Lord. Not to make us righteous. We know that it will not make us righteous. But because we are righteous, we strive to obey the law of God. And therefore we say with Paul in Romans 7 verse 22, for I delight in the law of God after the inward man. The one who has the righteousness of Christ imputed to him. He realizes that he or she did not receive that by works. It was a righteousness imputed without the law, without the works of the law. But the very fact that God in His grace has imputed His righteousness to us causes us to delight in the law of God. The law of God is not something that we shun from. It's something we delight in. Not to obtain righteousness, but because we are righteous. And we desire with Paul there in 1 Corinthians 15:34, awake to righteousness and sin not. We desire to do that because we've been made righteous. Ephesians 4, verse 24, put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness. And in Philippians 1 and verse 11, being filled with the fruits of righteousness. We desire these things. We long for these things. But we realize this is not what makes us righteous. This is not what makes us righteous. If you think that, then you are ignorant of God's righteousness. and you go about to set up and establish your own standards of righteousness. Notice in Philippians 1 verse 11, being filled with fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God. Why do we obey the law of God? Why do we strive after holiness? Why do we strive to do what God says? To the praise and glory of God. Not to be made righteous, but that He would get the glory. We see also 1 Timothy 6 verse 11. Follow after righteousness. Oh, when we realize that God has imputed to us the very righteousness of Jesus Christ, we ought to want to follow after righteousness. But no matter how much I follow after righteousness, no matter how much you follow after righteousness, you will never become righteous following after righteousness. Again, Romans 9:31. Israel followed after the law of righteousness, but they did not attain. And neither do you and I. And when we think that any of these acts of righteousness make us right, we've lost sight of the grace of God. We've lost sight of the imputed righteousness of Christ. We've lost sight of God's way of righteousness. So I pray tonight that we never become unconscious or ignorant or oblivious to the righteousness of God, to the way of God's righteousness. Because when we do, you serve for all the wrong reasons. Everyone who serves for reward, that's a works-based righteousness, and you have forgotten God's righteousness. You have become ignorant of God's righteousness. We don't serve for reward. Again, that doesn't make sense. When you realize how depraved you are, it's never going to balance out. All these people say, well, I just hope it just balances out. I got news for you. You don't have a chance. You don't have a chance. It'll never balance out. Never. And the thing is, even if it could, that wouldn't be enough. We're not talking about a balance here. It's got to shift all the way. We have to love Him with all our heart, with all our soul. So when we think that certain acts make us righteous, then we begin to serve for the wrong reasons. Not only that, our perceptions become twisted. Our perceptions of ourselves. Why are there so many Pharisees today? Because they're ignorant of God's righteousness. And they think because they're a member of a New Testament Baptist church, or because they do this or that, and they don't do this or that, that makes them righteous. Well, that's what the Pharisees believed. That's what makes Pharisees. And our world's full of them. The religious world is full of Pharisees. Perhaps more today than there were even in Christ's day. It's a real problem. But we don't obey to be righteous. We obey because the righteousness of God has been imputed to us. God has done that for us. You see, what happens when we become ignorant of the righteousness of God, how we attain it, become like the Pharisee in the parable. We already saw there in Luke 18. He felt pretty good about himself. He felt pretty comfortable in his righteousness. But you see, when you realize there's nothing I can do as a child of God, nothing you can do as a lost sinner if you're here and lost, that is acceptable unto God. Nothing. Then we become like the publican in the parable, smiting his chest and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. When we realize the righteousness of God, that's our plea. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. When we do obey, and when we do the best we can to obey, And we do it as correctly as we can, and we ought to. We ought to do all those things. But our prayer should still be this. Even after we've done all of those things, even after we've come into the house of God and we've been faithful as far as man is concerned, and after we've done all those things, that should be our plea. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And that will be our plea when we realize where God's righteousness comes from. Again, we ought to strive to do what's right. We ought to strive to obey every command of God. You ought to strive to do everything that is pleasing to God. Remember when Jesus Christ was baptized and God said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Jesus Christ was the only person that God could say that of. You and I, we can obey God, but outside of the righteousness of Christ, God will never say, "This is my beloved in whom I'm well pleased." He can only say that because of the righteousness that's been imputed to us. So it's important. Again, I realize that Romans chapter 10 basically is talking, the application is basically the unsaved. But I think many of God's people have become ignorant of God's righteousness. And that's a great danger. Because when we do that, that's when we set up our own rules. That's when we set up our own standards. And there's something about man's standards. You set up standards that you find convenient. You set up standards that fit you. But no matter how many standards you have, and no matter how rigid the standards are, none of them will make you righteous. Not one. I'm not saying we shouldn't have standards. We ought to. God's people ought to have the highest standards on the planet. But they won't make us righteous. What makes us righteous and acceptable is Jesus Christ's righteousness has been put to our account. That's grace. And if grace doesn't motivate you to serve, nothing will. Nothing will. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us verse of song.